Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Roker Report, where today we take you back 20 years to a time when Sunderland was bouncing. I've just moved into our brand spanking new home, Stadium of Light, and today we are privileged to be speaking to not only one of the best centre-halves I've ever seen in the red and white stripes, but a player who had a major role in settling into our new home, making 168 appearances at the centre of our back four between 1997 and 2003. Today I'm very pleased to be speaking to Jody Craddock. Welcome, Jody.
Hello there.
Great to speak to you, even in these circumstances.
Yes, it's all a bit strange at the moment with the coronavirus, but yes, it's always nice to talk and relive a few of them fond memories of mine.
Yeah, let's cheer a few people up to when Sunderland were almost at the top of the league, touching distance we were. I imagine the recent events might have given you an opportunity to get some serious painting time in.
It has, yes. You know, I spend most of my days anyway, except for the weekends where I'm usually doing kids' football. So I spend most of my days, you know, 5 or 6 hours a day painting. Now there's no kids' clubs in the evening. I haven't got to take the football training and different bits and bobs. I haven't got to go and pick them up from the school run. So I've got another extra 2 or 3 hours of painting each day, which, you know, which it benefits me, which is great. I just get work together and get it ready for art fairs, which have been cancelled at the minute, but there'll be other art fairs and they'll be put on once this clears over. So it just gives me time to get more work together, which is fine.
Good stuff. Well, I want to come back to that because I'm one of your 70,000 followers on Twitter. Uh-huh. Who follow you for little bits and pieces on the football, but mainly to see some of your work, which I have to admit is pretty spectacular to see. So I definitely want to touch on that before we finish up.
No problem.
Because I think it's fantastic. But to begin with, I want to take you back to the beginning. So I want to take you back to Cambridge United.
Yeah.
So where you started your career. You made your debut as an 18-year-old and went on to play 150 games during your first 4 years where you were pretty much never present. So this resulted in you being pretty highly rated at the time. So were there any opportunities to leave Cambridge before Sunderland came knocking in 97?
Only one opportunity. You know, I loved Cambridge. I've got some great mates, which I still keep in contact with. And I'm a young lad who's just left school going to play football. It was amazing. And I went to Woking on loan from Cambridge. It was great. And then I come back from there and it really put me in a good position to then play games and become accustomed to playing, you know, better football. I nearly went very close to going to Oxford just before Sunderland came in. I was only a young boy, but I just didn't think it was the right deal, the right time. So I kind of said no to that one. So then Sunderland came knocking on the door and it was a matter of, it would have been maybe the pre-season time. And then I went up to Sunderland. I had a trial for a week or two and then I came back down to Cambridge and I think we virtually started the season. And then they were like, right, yeah, we want to sign you, come back up again. And I went back up and the rest is history, as they say.
Because didn't you just miss out on playing under John Beck at Cambridge or was he still around?
Yes, I missed out on that, fortunately, because I heard some horror stories about the amount of running he used to like doing. And for me, I was never a runner. You know, at the start of my career, I was never a runner. I was fast and I had a lot of pace, but I wasn't a runner. So I had to work really hard in that early stages of my career to build up my fitness and kind of turn myself into a hard worker, a runner, you know, someone that, could do the runs and then keep that fitness and that endurance during a game. It was hard work for me. It took a lot and a few years, but once I got it, I kind of maintained it for my whole career. Then it was, I'm really glad I just missed out just missed out on John Beck based on the, I know the amount of running he used to do.
Yeah, he had a good apprenticeship though, because you were under Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson.
Fantastic record.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Took me to the club, Gary Johnson did. Absolutely brilliant. Gave me my opportunity. Yeah, and then after he went,
He had a big effect on you then, whoever it was.
Well, I was just thinking there was a couple of them. There was a two or three. Roy McFarlane was one. Roy McFarlane was the manager that, so he was there. And he was a great manager. He was there he kept me there, you know, and he was a manager just as I left. So they really wanted to, I've just remembered. It was Tommy Taylor. Sorry, I apologise for Tommy Taylor. I don't know how I forgot him. I was thinking John Taylor, who was the centre forward, but Tommy Taylor. Sorry, back to the question. I was holding out on my contract and not signing, but it was only because I'd had clubs interested, and it was really hard. I was only a young lad, and they put a lot of pressure on me to sign. And of course, they wanted me to sign and stay at Cambridge, but, you know, I kind of had wind of it that a club had come in, and clubs were coming in and really interested. So, you know, it would have been silly to sign. And so it's just one of the things I kind of held out and got the move, which was brilliant.
When Sunderland came, I mean, was it an easy decision? Because I wonder, I mean, how did the conversation go? Was it because you were 22 at the time? Did Peter Reid say, I want you to, you kind of for the future, or I want you to really push from the off to get in that first 11?
It was just about, I think he just saw potential in me. And I don't think he was taking me up there to particularly chuck me in a team straight away. I think he just saw potential. He saw how hard I worked. You know, I was fast. I was good in the air. I was a good tackler. You know, my distribution was lacking a bit, but that was something we could work on. But I worked really, really hard, because that's how I've always done my whole career. And I forced myself into the team in the first season I was there, which was a shock to me. I think we even played at Wembley, which was brilliant. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, I think he brought me in thinking, right, I was a young lad with potential. Let's see if we can, build that potential, and thankfully I repaid them and got into the team, and had a great career at Sunderland.
Yeah, because you ended up signing for $300,000 in that summer of 97, and it was just after we'd been relegated from the Premier League. But I mean, when you came in, did you get that feeling that the club was still getting over relegation, or was it right kind of focused on getting back there?
Not particularly. I was only a young boy, so it was all quite a big shock to me. I remember going up there the first day I went up there to see Peter Reid. You know, Roker was still open, which was great, so I got to go to Roker and just see what it was about. But it was getting shut down, because, you know, the day I signed was the day that stadium light opened. So it was just great. It was great times, and I've enjoyed it so much.
I mean, that summer, I mean, as well as yourself, we signed Kevin Phillips, obviously, Chris Meagan, Lee Clark, Chris Byrne. Edwin Zoetemelk came in, and they started building up a bit of optimism around the city with the new stadium open. I mean, I remember my own reaction when I walked in for the Ajax friendly. I mean, I couldn't believe walking into the stadium. Like, I couldn't believe it was ours, to be honest. But I wonder, was there a similar excitement within the squad in that summer to get going in the new stadium?
Yeah, it was an excitement, because it was just an amazing stadium. And God, who doesn't want to play on a stadium like that? You know, every player, especially a young player like myself, it was my dream to play there. You know, like I said, I was still a young boy. So playing on the, you know, I didn't play in that against Ajax. I didn't play that game. I was only a young boy, just gone to the team. You know, I was kind of more worrying about my own career and what I could do to make sure I played at this amazing club. And I think that's kind of, that was always going through my head. What can I do? What can I do to be where these players are? And, play on that pitch. I wasn't kind of thinking, right, you know, looking, I wasn't projecting forward, thinking, right, we're going to, you know, go for promotion and all this. And that wasn't it. I was thinking, how am I going to get in this team? That was my one and only thought, is what am I going to do to get in this team? Who am I up against? You know, them type of things. I wasn't thinking further than that, of like, oh, this is a great team. You know, Kev Phillips come to the team, is fantastic. But I didn't know anything about Kev before then. You know, most of the players I didn't know much about. So it wasn't like I had an idea of how well they could do. You know, just one of them. I think it's probably more of a selfish point of view, that I was just thinking about myself and how I can make sure I turn this into a, you know, good opportunity for myself.
Well, I mean, just thinking about it there as you were talking, I mean, I'm just thinking, walking through those doors as a 22-year-old into a squad with the likes of Kevin Ball, Alex Ray. I think Bracewell was still there. Quinn, huge characters in the squad that you came in.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Fantastic guys. Yeah, nice people as well. Really nice guys, which I got on very well with. I kept my head down. I worked really hard, and I think they just appreciated that. It paid off in the end. But yeah, players that I looked up to and learnt from, you know, every single day in training. Saying that, Alex Ray, who, you know, is a great mate of mine now. I couldn't understand a word he was saying for weeks and weeks. I just couldn't understand a word he was saying. I had to learn Scottish, as stupid as it sounds. I could not understand a word he was saying. And it was like, and it was like a foreign language. You know, I'd been at Cambridge, I'd been at Bournemouth before that. And I'd never encountered a Scottish person like on a daily basis. So I had to kind of, but it was so, it was a bit, it was crazy, you know. But you know, you settle in and you learn to love the place and the people and the accent. Yeah, everything's brilliant. So, you know, really did enjoy it up there.
So you had to learn Macaman Scottish in your first year then, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, the Macaman was easier than Scottish. Scottish was really tough. It just sounded like Chinese, and I was like, what is he saying? But all of a sudden it clicked, and I think, right, okay, I understand now. But yeah, brilliant.
Well, imagine any squad with Peter Reid and Bobby Saxton at the top. Well, you'll have that team spirit kind of just built in almost.
Yeah, definitely. But team spirit is massive. You know, I think Leicester proved that a few seasons ago when they won the Premiership. You need team spirit in a team. If you want to do well as a team, you need that team spirit. You know, you could have a team of world beaters, but if you haven't got that spirit in there, then it's not going to work. And we had that. And Peter Reid and Saka were brilliant. Everybody just got on so well with them, and they'd ensure there was that team spirit. We'd go out on, you know, team day outs, and that's what Peter Reid was about. I think it was important to him that the team, you know, got on really well. And there was no hiccups. And I think that pays off. The team subconsciously just worked better on the pitch then, and on and off the pitch.
So we got into that first season at Stadium of Light. We started at the beginning without your involvement, I might add to that. And we lost three of the first four league games, and obviously not having the best of starts. And then it gets worse. We got beat 4-0 at Elm Park, which I think is a pretty legendary game now in Sunderland folklore. And by this point, you've made your debut in the League Cup against Bury. But were you getting when that Peter Reid wanted to change things up, or was it a bit of a surprise to you as well?
I don't know. Like I said, all I can do is, you know, work really hard. You kind of might get an inkling of these things about how hard you work and train. Obviously, reserves, you play reserve games and doing okay, and you know, you get a little inkling. So, you know, it's good for players that there's always pressure on them from other teammates, you know, one in their position. And I was hungry. I was ready for it. And it was great. I think me and Daz Williams went in and we had a really good partnership, and we'd already obviously played in the reserves together and you kind of understood each other's game, and it just worked. Did I get an inkling? I suppose when the team's losing, there's always that pressure, and there's always that pressure on the manager to try a change. You know, he could have put me in too early and it might not have worked, and it wouldn't have been an issue that, you know, they'd have took me out again and said he's not ready and put me in at a later date, and it was one of them things. But you put the player in, you put me in, you put Daz in, and we do well, and there you go. There's a partnership. You just formed a new partnership that can handle themselves in the first team.
Well, obviously, we're talking about that huge turnaround. And because you, as you said, you came in after that Reading game. The next league game was away to Huddersfield. You came in with Darren Williams in the centre of defence. And up to that point, we'd lost 5 in the first 10.
Yeah.
And then after that point, we lost 3 in the next 36 league games. And this turnaround's talked about quite a lot, you know, when you talk about this kind of era and how Peter Reid kind of turned that around. But within the squad, was it a case of, you know, with those characters we're talking about, did you just know that the form was going to come at some point, or were there a few strong words behind the scenes from certain characters to get people going?
Look, you got characters like Borley and Alex Ray. They're your strong characters. So they're ones that, like, gee you up, come on. You know that as a player, but they're your ones you look towards. They're the ones that set the example. You know, Ball is the captain. He leads by example. You follow him. He goes in and smashes into a tackle. You're right behind him, backing him up, type of thing. You know, he led by example. He was brilliant. And you know, Alex Ray, that's what those type of players do. And they then give you that confidence. You know, when you're a young player, it's great. You don't do any wrong. Yeah, people weren't expecting me to go in and be brilliant. And you just go in and enjoy. Well, you try and enjoy it. I didn't realise that was the statistics behind it all. But yeah, fantastic. You kind of look to these big players to kind of drag the players through, and then you build as players and at the same time. And, you know, it's great. That's what football is about. That's what having a captain in your team that's like that. That's what it's about. You know, you need those players to guide the younger players.
For you, that must have been pretty incredible to come in. And obviously, you know, from Cambridge, kind of stepping up kind of two divisions from Division 3, I think it was back then. Yeah. And whether it was 4-3, but I'm pretty sure it was the third division back then. And then you stepped up to the first division. But to go straight into the team and then go into a team that's, you know, banging the goals in on one end and you're keeping it tight at the other, losing 3 and 36. I mean, you made 31 starts in the end of that season, so that must have been an incredible debut season or something.
It was amazing. Yeah, when you say it like that, I didn't quite know how many it was, but yeah, fantastic. A bit of a dream start for me, really. You don't expect that as a player. I would have been happy to just come in and dip in and out the team and play when I was required. But like I said, you take them opportunities. When them opportunities arise, you've got to take them. It's throughout my whole career. When you get that opportunity, you can't kind of crumble and let it slip by. You have to rise to it and you have to grasp it and take it and make the most of it. And I think I was that type of player. Unless I had that, you know, froze on the spot, it wasn't going to happen. I'd worked so hard for that opportunity, and it was really important that I took that opportunity. But with the players in front of you, we had some great players there. I used to stand at the back. It's not just that year, but the year after and the year after when we're in the Premiership. And I used to think, my God, this is so easy. I think I'd just head of the ball and tackle people, and I'd roll it to the nearest player, and they'd just pass up the pitch and go and smash it in the goal. That's what I remember standing there. I think it might have been Boxing Day. Who did we play? We played, it could have been Grimsby. It could have been them. Or it could have been Bradford. It was like a 4-0 or 4-1.
It was Bradford 2-0 in your first season.
And I stood at the back thinking, God, this is easy. I'm thinking, these lads are brilliant. I'm thinking, looking at these lads, thinking, these are brilliant. They're just passing it, you know, Alan Johnson, Mickey Gray, you know, these type of players up and down the field. I'm thinking, when it comes to me, right, I just win it, just head it, just tackle it. There you go. Nice and simple. And they made my job easy.
Yeah, due to that Boxing Day, we absolutely battered them 2-0. I think it could have been 5-6-7.
Well, I was thinking it might have been another one. I think it was a flock of 4-0. I think Don Hutchinson scored. I thought it was Grimsby, but I might be wrong.
The Boxing Day in your first season was Bradford. And
it was a couple of seasons later, but I just missed that feeling of, my God, it's Boxing Day, we're 4-0 up. And, you know, that's when you enjoy. As a player, don't people say, oh, did you enjoy it? And think, no, I didn't really enjoy playing. I loved playing football, but you don't get to enjoy a game of football because you're like working really hard on that pitch and you know, you're trying to get everything right. But when you are 4-0 up, that's when you enjoy a game of football because just everything's going right. But before that, 1-0, 2-0, you know, it's not something you enjoy. You enjoy it after, you enjoy scoring a goal, but during a game, it's like working and then you knuckle down and... But yeah, when you get a nice lead, then you can enjoy it, which is great.
We might have quite a few younger listeners who are listening to this. Just don't quite understand how much Sunderland won back then, because I'm not sure we've really experienced it since that. I've never experienced had that feeling of going to watch Sunderland since that period where I've just thought Sunderland are going to win today. And that was the only period in my time, in my life, where I've just thought, how many are we going to win today? I mean, just give you an example. I mean, that period you're talking about in your first season.
Yeah.
And I'll go from the last game of November to the last game of December. And I'm just going to rattle off the scores. And this is Sunderland winning every single one. We won 3-0, 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 2-0.
That's great, isn't it? How many clean sheets? That's brilliant. I'm thinking, I'm a defender. Clean sheets. Wow, that's really good. Yeah, but these players are just banging them goals. And like I said, they made my job easy at the back.
Absolutely incredible team. I mean, it obviously, I was at the right age as well, kind of, you know, mid-teens. I mean, it was just perfect. I mean, Sunderland would fly. And this was the season it all started, because the year before obviously ended in relegation. The whole kind of city was down thinking, oh, you know, this new stadium and it's in the second division. And that team just kind of pulled it round that season. It was just an amazing time.
Exactly.
That season, I mean, especially from the first 10 games, I mean, what did we say that, you know, losing 5 in the first 10 league games, we ended up going on to get 90 points by the end of the season, but lost out to Middlesbrough by a point in getting automatic promotion.
Yeah.
In most years, that would have seen us lift the title. So, I mean, how did the squad feel after that? Was it a blow and you needed to be lifted back up, or was it just straight into the playoffs?
Straight into playoffs. And it's always that, you know, that hope, that wish, you know. But straight into the playoffs. And we all know how that finished. But maybe we weren't quite ready. You know, while me and Daz were only young, maybe we weren't quite ready. And, you know, that extra season in the Championship, you know, and that, which was fantastic. And then we got promoted after that. So maybe it just wasn't the time. But it's one of them, isn't it? It's you know, when you do actually win, it's amazing. You're still thinking all the way along, though, come on, you know, I hope we can do this. I hope nothing just, you know, gives away and we get an injury and it all messes up. You know, you think like that as a player. I suppose that's what makes you work harder at the end of the day.
Well, I just want to touch on that playoffs, because we lost the first leg of the semi-final against Sheffield United 2-1 on the Sunday. And then they came back to the Stadium of Light for the second leg under the floodlights. And I don't know if you can remember, but the thick fog on the Wednesday night, for me, this was still the best atmosphere I've ever witnessed at any football match, never mind Sunderland. I mean, I don't know whether you can remember it, but can you even describe what that was like?
I totally agree. I've never heard in my whole career, you know, 20 years, that cheers and the fans as loud as that day. You know, when someone, you know, one of your kids screams in your ear and your ear makes that funny kind of whining noise. Right, well, that's what I got when the fans cheered. It was, I'd never heard anything after that, anything before that, anything like that, you know, before. It was so loud. And my God, that must strike fear into the opposing team, and it really helped lift us up. And, you know, wow, how amazing is that to have that following and that push behind you? It gives you such a boost. It's brilliant.
That night, as I said, I mean, we're all missing Roker Park, I think, but this was, I think, the night when everyone said, right, we've found our new home now. Because, I mean, you hear about people describe atmospheres as being electric, but it all kind of came together that night. The scenario that we had a win by 2 goals, the fog, and we were just on top of them from the off. And we ended up getting those 2 goals and kind of setting up that Wembley playoff final. But it was just such an amazing night.
I agree. You know, I'll always remember it. It's fantastic. Great for the fans. You know, what a privilege for me to, you know, at a young age, being involved in that and, you know, then getting to play at Wembley. Well, that was a bit of a dream as well. So,
yes, end of your first season with Sunderland, and we set up that playoff final at Wembley. So how did you find the build-up for the game of that size at Wembley, especially in your first season at that level?
Do you know what? I think when you're a young lad, you just take things in your stride and you kind of, I don't know, things didn't really affect me. You're only young, just kind of get on with it. You know, you look towards your older players and they're quite calm. Yeah, yes, inside they'd be nervous. Of course, I was always nervous for every game in my whole career, but that was a good thing, I thought. But yeah, you take it in your stride. I'm thinking, what a privilege, you know, for my family to come and watch me play at Wembley. Fantastic. I didn't enjoy the result, don't get me wrong, but I loved the experience and loved that opportunity to play at such an amazing place for such an amazing team.
Did really kind of give you plenty of notice that you were in the team, or was it a last minute kind of pin it up on the
notice? I can't quite remember, to be honest. But you know, you kind of get the inkling as a player that if you've been playing, then you continue to play. So I'm just trying to think, you know, you didn't know to the day with Reedy whether you were in the team or not in the team. It was one of them ones. So, but yeah, I suppose there's always that relief when your name goes up and you're on that board and you're thinking, you're right, yeah, you know, this is my day, I'm playing, this is it.
You said you made the start in 11, and as was with a game, it was a fairly dull first half with Charlton kind of with Clive Mendonca going in 1-0 up. But then after that, it all kind of descended into chaos with 7 goals across the second half and extra time. and then it goes to 4-4. But as a defender in that sort of game, I mean, does it just go to how you can hold your nerves, because the goals are flying in at both ends and you just think everything they hit's going to go in? How do you feel the game with chaotic like that?
I know it is chaotic. I'm thinking, well, we've let 4 goals and I ain't done my job right there. You know, something's gone wrong. You know, at that point, did, you know, my age go against me? Was I not experienced enough to deal with it? It's one of them, isn't it? I've never watched the video. I've never watched the game back, and I don't feel I need to ever watch it back, to be honest. You know, we lost that game. We actually, you know, went to penalties. If you took just the game and the extra time, it was a draw. But, you know, we lost on penalties. But, yeah, but if I was to watch that game, I'd pick out a million faults and a million things I did wrong. But, you know, all I can say, it's a team game. So, you know, I can't, like, just blame myself for not, you know, for letting him fall. You know, you do it as a team. You know, as a young lad, you probably don't realise that. But as you get older and more experienced, then you realise, yeah, now as a team, you know, it's a team game here. And everyone's at fault when you let in 4 goals.
Yeah. Well, just out of interest, what was the message at full time when you were going in extra time? Was it just a case of, you know, Reid and Saxon just trying to kind of get you back up and get the energy levels going?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
get the first goal?
To be honest, I can't really remember. But I think from a manager's point of view, you know, your lads are tired. It is right. Come on. You've got to keep everybody, you know, that end of time to, you know, give anybody a telling off, nothing like that. It's a time to get everybody together, get, you know, checking no injuries, checking everyone feels okay. You know, right, go in there, dig in. You know, give it all you've got. You know, you've come this long road through the season. Right, you know, put everything in for the remaining extra time. But you know, just wasn't enough. Yeah, we drew that extra time, but it just wasn't enough, and we lost on the penalties. And you know, penalties are a lottery. I hate penalties. It's It's just one of them things, and someone's got to miss at the end of the day.
I was there behind that goal. You did mention the penalties there, but I'm just wondering, has it crept up and it got to 6-6, 7-6? I mean, had the thought crossed your mind that you might need at some point?
I was absolutely bricking it. I was thinking, oh my God, I can't take a penalty. What's, you know, it's like my first season at Sunderland. I've been playing in the Division 2 and 3 for Cambridge before this. I've never felt so much pressure in my life. I was thinking, I can't take a penalty. I don't even know what I do. I thought if I had to take one, I'm always going to, like, I'm right footed, so I'm going to go bottom left. I'm going to drag the ball low, keep it low and hard, and go into bottom left. But I was watching the keeper. And so if it was a right-footed shot, he'd always dive to the right. And if it was a left-footed shot, he's always going to the left. And I was thinking, I'm doomed. I am absolutely doomed because he's diving the way I'm going to put it every single time. I'm thinking, I just don't know what else to do. I didn't have the nerve to think, well, I'll just put it in the other corner then. But I was just thinking, I'm doomed. And so, but, you know, bless Mickey Gray, steps up and he misses it. But oh, if it weren't Mickey, it would have probably been me missing it. So cheers, Mickey, for missing that one, because it would have been me next.
I mean, when you were deciding them, did they only go up to the first five, and it was just kind of whoever fancies it after that?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you know, I run kids' football teams, and I'm like, and if you go to a penalty competition, I say, right, who wants to take them? I don't care who says they want to take them. Penalties, it was all about being confident, and because I know that if I, with my kids, if I did 10 penalties each in training, they'd all be absolutely brilliant. But it's who can cope with that pressure on the day, and you know, in that moment. And so the manager goes, who wants to take them? And whoever says yep, then you go with it. And you don't think past the five penalties. You don't think who's next. I've got Danny Dicho next to me saying, who's our centre forward, by the way, saying, I am not taking a penalty. And I'm thinking, and we're going, what do you mean you're not taking a penalty? He says, I'm not taking a penalty. I say, then me and Daz are like, oh, well, one of us is going to have to take on. I'm kind of hoping Daz, being a bit more experienced at being at a bigger club than me, may have took one before me, but I don't know. It didn't get that far, so we'll never know.
Well, it did finish at 7-6. So, but obviously, everyone was good. I mean, I was absolutely devastated behind the goal there. But I mean, in terms of the players, I've read kind of various players' books and heard stories with things like this, and I mean, I've heard that the squad drowned their sorrows on the way back. Was that a good session?
I think that the club had hired, I don't even know where the room was, it had hired a place. So it would have been like, if we'd have won, it would have been a victory celebration. If we lost, it would have just been some food type thing. So yeah, but we still had to go there, which was a bit of a drag. You know, the only thing you want to do when you've finished is go home and just do nothing. But no, we still had to go there and have some food. And, you know, we'd had a couple of drinks, not that people were particularly drinking, but you know, all he did his best to cheer everybody up as he did. He was a right good laugh. So it's a tough one. You still have to go through the motions, and that's part and parcel of football, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I heard all of the stories on the team coach. I think there was a good one where, I don't know how true it was, but I'm sure I heard this one where I might have been in Ned Quinney's book or something like that, actually, where he said there was a request to mix the coaches up, so kind of some of the, you know, the wives and girlfriend's coach, and mix it up with the players, so some players went on the other coach, and there was talk of that going on, and I think I read that Bobby Saxton just went, nope, none of that, the players' coach is sacrilege, and it's not like that.
That's probably about right. Yeah, I can imagine Sacco doing that. You know, obviously Sacco weren't too happy at the end of the game, which is understandable, and I'm at the end of the game, I've just got my head down, and I'm just kind of, as you do, you just get yourself ready and sort stuff out. But yeah, I can imagine Sacco saying that. He'd be quite blunt, and that'd be it. Nope. Yeah, no chance. So it was probably a good move, to be honest.
My overriding memory of walking out of Wembley was because Wembley was dropping a bit by that point, and there was Port were cabins, which were essentially all the toilets.
Yeah.
And as we were coming out, they were playing over the tannoy, and there were all the Charlton, you can hear the Charlton fans celebrating and stuff still in the stadium, and the fans, and they had playing over the all of the tannoy. They had play I'm Walking on Sunshine.
Great.
And at that point, I was walking through whatever was leaking out of these porter cabins. It certainly wasn't sunshine. There you go. So yeah, so I mean, we all know Reid and Saxon could motivate players, but that must have taken some kind of skills to pick that squad up after that.
Well, do you know what? You go on your break for the summer holidays. You know, you go on your break, you go on holiday, you get over it. You know, you've got no choice really, because then you're coming back and you use that time off to reflect, to kind of forget about it, and you come back feeling fresh and ready. And it's one of them, it's like, right, we'll come back and we'll be even better. And we did come back and we were better, and it was brilliant. That's what you do, that's what you have to do. Point kind of worrying about it and letting it affect you, if you want to do well, you forget about it and carry on and train hard in pre-season and make sure you do great the following year.
Yeah, because actually what's amazing is, considering how well we did and haven't missed out, that all of that squad basically stayed together for the next year.
And rightfully so. There was a good team there. Why change it? Unless obviously, I know it's harder if you've got a team coming in wanting to buy a player and going up to the Premiership, but you keep hold of your top players. It's brilliant, and that's what you need to do, and that's what the manager did. And that puts you in a good position. Then going into the following year, you've still got that strong squad that had been winning games, and hopefully strengthen it and go on and get promotion.
We'll go into the following season, and obviously picking the squad back up. You actually started that season in the first 11, and I think what looked like that was the plan, where we'd signed Paul Butler from Bury, and it looked like it was going to be you and Paul Butler to the kind of play regularly that season. You guys were the first choice centre halves that season, but you picked up an injury early on. Andy Melville came in, and you weren't able to get back in the side. I mean, obviously it's difficult not playing, but was it made easier or more difficult that the team was playing so well the next season that you didn't really have an argument to get back in?
That's exactly what it was. I had no argument to get back in. All I had to do is, I couldn't do anything. When a team's winning, all you can do is train and wait for your moment, and my moment would never really arise because you have a team that's winning and doing so well, which disappointing from my point of view. But you're a team player, and what do you want? Inevitably, you want your team to get promotion. So it's kind of a bittersweet. Whereas you want your team to win and get promotion, because that just benefits the whole of Sunderland. Yeah, but I wasn't playing, so all you do is just work really hard and play your reserve games and do everything you can just to make sure that you're ready. If there is an opportunity that you can just step in and, and carry on as the player before you was.
Yeah. One of the aspects I've read from, Peter Reid's management style from a few ex-players was that even when you weren't in the team, he still made you feel part of it and you felt part of the squad. Was that how you felt at that time as well?
Yeah, I think so. You've got to, haven't you, as a manager? Everybody, you need a squad. It's not about just 11 players on that pitch. It's about a squad, because at any moment somebody can get injured. And if you've got somebody on the sideline who's not, feels like they've been pushed out and they're not happy, then you're asking them to come in and do a job and be professional. So, yeah, it's a big job for a manager and a coach to keep everybody happy, the whole squad happy, make sure players are ready to come in, and you've got to keep them players that are on the fringe happy, and that they can come straight in and do a job if required. And they did a good job at doing that. They believed in really good team morale, which is a necessity.
But that season we romped home over 100 points, 28 clean sheets. We were kind of breaking records all over the place. Phillips was banging them in, Quinny was banging them in. It was an incredible season, but it must have been slightly bittersweet for you, not playing as much football as you would have liked that season, and the club doing so well.
Yes, I know. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But understandable. You can't get in a team which is winning. How can I knock on a manager's door and say I should be playing when the team's winning? I've got no argument. Butts and Andy were doing great in there, so I had no argument that I could knock on the door and say, look, I should be playing. I couldn't do that because they were doing brilliant. Not the ideal situation from a personal point of view, but for, you know, that was great going forward. That, you know, it was helping my career. I was going to become a Premiership player based on the hard work that these boys had put in all season. And it was fantastic for the club at that time.
Got promotion to the Premier League. And then it was obvious when teams get promoted to the Premier League, but Peter Reid was going to go out and strengthen. I think everyone knew that. And he went out and brought in, on paper, and actually one of the best defenders I've ever seen. He brought in Steve Bolden that summer, who I thought was an incredible player. And he brought in Thomas Helmer as well. And then you ended up going out on loan to Sheffield United. I mean, at this point, did you start looking elsewhere for permanent moves? Or were you always thinking, I'll get fitted or get some games under my belt at Sheffield United and then get back in at Sunderland?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I knew Adrian Heath from being at Sunderland. And but Boldy in, who was brilliant and he was a fantastic player. And I was thinking, well, how am I going to compete against him? So yeah, going on loan was great. I really enjoyed it. I went in to play at Sheffield United and I played some good football. I think I was there a month and who else was there? I think Stanislav Varga, I think he might have been in front of me as well. Was that year? Did they bring him in? And I think he got a big injury and I think he was playing. I don't know. I think he could have been playing. And he got an injury and then I came back. I don't know. I can't quite remember. But I was a month on loan at Sheffield. And I think I'd come back and I was back in the first team. But that's all, brilliant. Yeah, reserves are really good. Don't get me wrong. We had a great reserve team. I really enjoyed it. Played some great games. But you can't compare to that competitive football of the Championship or whatever division you're in. That competitive Saturday 3 o'clock football, there's no comparing to it. So if you can go on loan and play them games, then they're ideal, because then that really makes you ready for when your team does need you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, you came back from Sheffield United and you end up playing 18 times in the Premier League that season and finished as, one of the first names down on the team sheet by the end of the season, which was amazing. And you also played in one of the games that season that's still talked about today. The Chelsea game at the Stadium of Light, we ended up 4-0 up by the 38th minute. I mean, that must have been another fantastic game to be involved in.
Oh, amazing. Like I said, you start to enjoy a game at 4-0. But I spoke earlier on in the conversation about it. It was the players in front of me were so good. The way they passed that ball around, it made my job easy. Me and Daz or whoever we were at the back, we had our players to mark. We'd mark them, we'd win our tackles, we'd get tight, stop them doing their jobs and then just pass it to the ballers, our fullbacks, our centre midfielders, pass it to them, let them get on and do the passing and all the, and all the fancy stuff. It was brilliant what a team to be involved with. And in fact, that was a fantastic result. And, Kev Phillips was banging them in. But you had partnerships, Mickey Gray, Alan Johnson, what a partnership they were. You need that throughout the whole squad. Phillips Quinn, we all know how good that was. You need those partnerships and everything just seemed to be clicking. It was great.
That's the strength and depth of that squad was amazing. I mean, it just looking at that day, we're talking about that fantastic Chelsea game. I mean, the centre midfield in front of you that day was Eric Roy and Paul Thirlwell, who, people might not mention much, but fantastic players.
Well, there you go. I didn't know what the team was, but that just shows the strength of the squad that then players could come in and help turn a team over like Chelsea for, what was the end result, 4-2? So,
it was 4-1 in the end.
Yeah. 4-1, sorry. So, so I suppose that just goes to show the strength of the squad and how good. We had a great reserve team as well at some point. I think we won the reserve league and I remember us having like 15,000 fans at home against a Man United reserve team. I think, oh my God, who? I bet there aren't many reserve teams can say they had 15,000 fans watching them at home. I was thinking, wow, that was, it was like a first team game. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I was there. I think it was 20 odd. I think it was 22,000.
Oh, really? Wow, there you go. That's more than most teams in the divisions, isn't it? So, that was a reserve team game. I think, wow. That was amazing. I think I scored that day as well. I remember it.
Brilliant time because that result put us fourth in the Premier League. But after that, we won one out of the next 12 and we ended up finishing seventh. And I mean, to this day, I mean, can you put your finger on what happened to our former team?
I can't know. It's one of them strange ones, isn't it? One out of 12 and finishing seventh. Just think if we'd have won a couple of games where we could have ended up. I think, what a shame. But, things like that do happen, and there's no putting your finger on it, because you don't change anything you do in training. You don't, you know, you don't become a worse football team overnight. It doesn't work like that. But so no, I can't put my finger on it. I don't think, you know, I suppose if you could put your finger on it, then you'd the manager would have done something about it. And mate, it just wasn't working. It was it's one of them strange ones, isn't it? You don't see it coming. And then once it happens, you can't. I suppose it comes down to a bit of confidence. Well, and if that confidence starts to drop, then to build that confidence up is harder. And if, you know, football's a massive confidence game. If you have confidence, then things go for you, and players, you know, play 10% better. And, you know, in this Premiership, you know, some small margins that really do count and make that big difference. And then points are so important.
It's one of the big what ifs. And the other thing in that season, you also played in your first time with a derby at the Stadium of Light, where we came back from two down to draw twos apiece. Where do you rate the experience of a North East derby in your career?
I love derbies. The questions I get now, what were your favourite games? You know, derbies were my favourite games of all time. You know, they were just amazing. I kind of understood where the fans were coming from. I kind of had that feeling myself. And, you know, Wolves, West Brom, you know, Sunderland, Newcastle, obviously. I love derbies. I'd be in derby mode from, you know, we'd have a game on a Saturday, you'd have a Sunday off, you come in training Monday. I'm thinking, right, I'm in derby mode now. You know, and that was it. My intensity, you know, set my own kind of goals and boundaries, and the intensity would go on, thinking my whole week's going to be bang on. Every single thing I do is going to be perfect, and I'm going to take that into the game. So, you know, I go into that game ready, you know, to the best of my ability, and then hopefully the manager's chose me, you know, that will be enough. And I used to love derbies. I'd be nervous as hell for the whole week, but they were great because those nerves, I'd really kind of focus how I, you know, what I did, and yeah, really helped me out. So I absolutely love derbies. Hate losing them, but I absolutely love playing them.
Yeah. I mean, you said you were acting different during that week, but was there just a different feeling around the whole place in the build-up to the week? Because I know as fans, when we can't sleep, we can't drink, we can't eat. Was there that sort of feeling around the...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do think so. Everything, the intensity, you know, usually in the build-up to a game in the week, you know, Monday, Tuesday, you know, it's a bit lighter after the weekend. It's a bit more of you might do a bit of running, but it'll be less intense. You know, Wednesday, you might get off. Thursday, you'd start to pick it up and you do some more work in relation to the game on a Saturday. And then Friday, you'd have a five-a-side. But you just notice with a derby, the intensity would be so much more on that Monday. You just feel that buzz, and that intensity would be more than usual, and which is good, because then you know you're going to be ready and you're going to be prepared for that game. You know, win, lose or draw, you know, it's one of them things. But you know, you know you're going to be ready and you're going to go out there and give 110%.
So to go on, the following season saw you as pretty much an ever-present in the team. You pretty much played every game, and you played for most of the season alongside kind of one of our big signings of that season. It was Emerson Thome. So he was one of a list of kind of, you know, pretty good centre-halves right in your time at Sunderland. So, I mean, in terms of Sunderland, who were your favourite players to play alongside at the back?
I enjoyed playing with Emerson. We had a good partnership. You know, he'd be the more of a baller. He'd do it as well, but I'm more of a tackler ahead of that type of, you know, gritty type player. He was a baller. He'd bring the ball out a little bit more from the back. You know, so I had a good partnership with him. You know, Daz Williams had a good partnership. I was good mates with Daz anyway, so that kind of helps. And we had a good partnership. And I remember I liked good Jocky Bjorklund when he was there. I had a good partnership with him as well. So, you know, it's really important as a player, you have a good partnership. If you don't have a good partnership, things don't work and you make mistakes. It's about understanding how each other play and what your strengths and weaknesses are, and, you know, covering each other, and you relying on your teammate to, you know, if you make a mistake, you know he's going to be there. If he makes a mistake, you're going to be covering him. You know, you kind of work as one. You know each other, how each other play, and that benefits the whole team. It benefits you and the whole team at the same time.
You two were brilliant to watch in that season. In that season as well, we touched on the derby, your first one the season before, but you got to play in a legendary night. It's got, you know, every Sunderland fan who was there that night at St James's Park when Shearer missed the penalty. We won 2-1. I mean, another fantastic night, you know, with you in a Sunderland shirt. Brilliant.
I know, how amazing. I think I'm sat in front of the in front of my jersey. Now I'm sat with doing an interview, I'm just sat in front of the jersey from the game. Brilliant. So, wow, what a memory, you know, playing in a derby, you know, Newcastle's a St. James, a massive ground, you know, the crowd, everything about it, them nights is massive. But then to go and turn them over at their place, you know, that's just that little bit extra, isn't it? But yeah, and then Shearer misses the penalty. Got on Tommy Sorensen, you know, game winner. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, that's what you train for. That's what he got paid for. And you know, he pulled one out the bag just when it counted and he wins you the game. You know, wow, what an amazing feeling. You know, at the end of the game, they're the games you look back at and think, wow, what a privilege that was to be involved with that, you know, at a young age that I was. And I think, you know, that's amazing. They're just, you know, memories I'll never, ever forget.
I mean, sometimes I get them mixed up because we kind of beat Newcastle that many times around this time. but sure, there were a bunch of the Sunderland players, yeah, who went out in the town that night. I'm pretty sure
I would have been one of them. We did go out in the town a few times. You know, I think that's kind of shows the relationship we had with the fans, and we would go out in the town. You know, you go out in your tracksuit, and I'm thinking, my God, you wouldn't dream of doing that now. I think, what a numpty, we used to go out in our tracksuits, but you just kind of didn't care. You'd think, what a result. You just want to celebrate it as everybody does, and you want to share it with the people it means the most to, which is the fans. And the fans are always brilliant, and we'd always, you know, we would go out down the town and we'd have a great time. Fans were always amazing.
Yeah, I bet you didn't have to buy a drink that night, that's for sure.
I can't remember, strangely enough.
Well, I mean, you talk about that time of the closestness of the fans. I mean, I think when you went down to play games in London, you really would make you all go out and drink with the fans, wouldn't
you? Oh, yeah, you know. He was a big believer in keeping that relationship with the fans. And I think it's really important, you know, whether you're doing good or bad, it's really, and at any club, you know, you need that relationship with that fans. You know, they're the ones that, you know, stand in that stadium when it's freezing cold and pouring down with rain. And we're asking them to cheer us on, whether we're losing 4-0 or winning 4-0. So, you know, keeping that relationship with the fans is so important. And, you know, that was a thing that Peter Reid used to like doing. And, I think out of respect for the fans that would travel that distance, because we're a long old way from Sunderland, you know, it's out of respect for them and thanking them for, you know, all that travelling they do and the money they spend to come and watch us play. You know, we owed it to them to put on a performance, and that's what we tried and, you know, tried to do every year, every game.
It was frustrating though, you know, those fantastic results, but for a second season in a row, because we were second at the end of January. And then again, a similar run. We won 1 out of 11 league games and finished 7th again. I mean, again, it's another moment that talked about amongst Sunderland fans if we go back to that time. But I mean, I imagine at that point the players were just as frustrated as we were that we didn't kind of kick on, and especially second in a row that we didn't kind of get into Europe and start playing with a big boy.
I agree. Well, you know, what was that about? We'd do so well up to that point and then it would all fade off to the end of the season. It was a strange one. I can't put my finger on it, why it happened. Maybe too much Christmas turkey, but I really don't know. It's one of life's mysteries. You know, even if you'd picked up a few injuries, it shouldn't usually last that long. You know, that would affect you for a couple of games, maybe. It wouldn't affect you for 11 or 12 games in the other scenario. I know, really odd. Really odd. You know, we weren't the type of players that just, you know, took our foot off the pedals, but looking on paper, that's what you said we'd done, is took our foot off the pedal and kind of coasted home to the end of the season. But you know, we weren't that type of, you know, it wasn't that type of changing room, you know, Borley, Alex Ray, you know, they're not the type of players that would let us do that, you know. And as young players, you don't do that anyway. So, you know, it is a bit of an odd one. I'd be interesting to go back and relive it and think what the hell happened there. Boy,
I can't imagine Reading and Saxon letting you coast, to be fair.
No, exactly. I know they wouldn't, you know, they never did, but a strange one.
I mean, as we said, those 2 years we had a great side, and it was our best back-to-back league finishes since the 1930s, but an absolutely fantastic squad. And still, I mean, even though we didn't kick on like we wanted the team to do, I mean, seventh place finishes, I'd take your hand off for that, even in the second tier, never mind the Premier League.
During that time,
who did you rate as kind of the best players you played alongside in those 2 years?
Well, it was obviously Phillips and Quinn up front. You know, their partnership was great. You know, they're such a good partnership. When you got players like Gray and Johnson on the left, I thought them two worked so well together. It's really hard. Alex Ray was so tenacious, but you know, he could shoot and he would pass the ball. He, the man that you played, you know, you gave everything. You got players like Borley and Lee Clark would come in, and who else did we have there? Stefan Schwartz, was he there that time? Yeah, what a great player he was. So Nicky Summerby on the right. I think these players were good players. You know, how do you single out one person when all of them were, you know, they were all really good players? But I suppose that's why we were doing well. And, you know, that combination of players and that those pairings on the pitch, when they all work, you know, when your pairing works and they all work at the same time, you know, that's when you start getting good results.
Yeah, and then the next year, I mean, you know, the wheels kind of started to come off the following year. We finished 17th and survived. I mean, did you feel the writing was on the wall and that team was starting to break up at that point?
I did, yeah. I felt it slipping, and I'm stood there thinking, I could feel it slipping. You can't do anything about it. The team was starting to break up, and I think that's the issue. You know, that's the problem. You bring different players in and don't necessarily always work. And it's a tough division to stay in the Premiership. And just because you finished seventh twice, it doesn't mean you're then going to, you know, you're going to stay in the Premiership. We all know what happened and how things can change so quickly.
Yeah, I think you touched on it there. I think in a few interviews, Peter Reid kind of admitted, and I think a few talk-ins as well in the clubs, some of the pubs and clubs around Sunderland, that he made some mistakes on the recruitment side around that point. Because I imagine alarm bells were ringing when Alexa kind of Milton Nunes was turning up at the training ground around that time.
Well, exactly. You know, I'm not going to knock these players because, you know, I know these lads under, but you got to bring in the right type of players that are going to, you know, push you on from seventh to, you know, keep you in that second position, so to speak. You know, if you're second position just after Christmas, you want players that are going to keep you up there. You need to spend the money, bring in the players, and, you know that they're going to tried and tested and they're going to come and fit straight into that team and do the job. And it wasn't that. And that's, like I said, I stood there in training one day and thought, you know, it's slipping and what do you do? But, you know, what can you do about it? It's we're going to get relegated. And we didn't get relegated that season, but I think it was the following season we did get relegated, and I saw it coming, and, you know, you can't do anything about it.
It was pretty spectacular as well the next season, because I think Peter Reid got sacked. I think it was in the October after we got beat 3-1 against Arsenal. That I think you actually got our goal in that one. And then Peter Reid was sacked and then replaced by Howard Wilkinson. So, I mean, at that point, what was the biggest surprise? Was it Reid getting sacked, or was it the fact we replaced him with Howard Wilkinson?
To be honest, I thought it was Reid's time to go. Was I in the team? I can't remember if I was in the team.
Well, you played in his last game.
You know, I don't think I was too... I don't know if I'd played the times before that, but I don't know if I was too happy, to be honest. I know around about that time, I think I lost my son as well, Jake. You know, I think just before I lost Jake, I was thinking, and I wasn't in the team. I was knocking on his door saying, why am I not in his team? I should be playing. He just wasn't putting me in. So I wasn't happy at that point. It was one of them. And, you know, it was Peter Reid's time to go. And then they brought Hal Wilkinson, who would have a meeting about a meeting. And everything changed drastically. And the intensity dropped. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. You know, I need to work hard. I need to be pushed. And, you know, he played me. Don't get me wrong. He played me in the team. And I like Cottrell, who was his wingman, the coach. He was brilliant. But I just, you know, I need to be working. You know, you need to get the lads out there working really hard, pushing, you know, improving. And we wouldn't. We'd have a meeting every day about, I don't even know what about, just about nothing. And then you'd go and stand on the pitch doing free kicks for an hour. I'm thinking, how long does it take to line the wall up to do a free kick? It takes 10 seconds on the pitch. Why are we taking an hour on the training ground? You know, it would drive me up the wall. But then that's why he got the sack, because that wasn't working. And you needed to approach it differently. And that was not the way to approach it. But, you know, I'm no manager, who am I to say? But that was just my opinion as a player.
Yeah, they couldn't have brought in a more different character if they tried, really. A squad that responded to and a Peter Reid and built by him, and then they bring in completely the opposite character. It just seemed a strange decision.
It was a very strange decision, yes. But like I said, Cottrell was like his coach, and he was excellent. I really, really rated him and everything he did. But, you know, he was only the coach, so he didn't pull the strings. You know, Wilkinson pulled the strings, and so you kind of, you were doing what he was saying. So, but yeah, he was definitely the wrong man for the job.
And horrific season, ended up on 19 points. But, you know, towards the end in kind of March time, we then swapped Wilkinson out again and brought McCarthy in. I mean, at that point, were you already decided, you know, I think I'm going to have a change here. You know, Sunderland, they're obviously going down. Or was there still a chance you might have stayed on to help McCarthy try and take us back home?
I absolutely adored being at Sunderland. Absolutely loved it. The fans, everything about it was fantastic. You know, as a footballer, I wanted to stay in the Premiership. But that didn't mean I was looking to get away from the club. You know, I was a Sunderland player and teams came in for me and kind of said, we want you. And that's it. That's how football works. I wasn't, you know, going out looking for a new club. They came knocking on the door and the club was, you know, they ended up getting rid of a couple of players, and I was one of those players that, you know, didn't have a lot of say in it. I did want to go. I did want to stay in the Premiership. You know, what player wouldn't want to stay in the Premiership? It's the best division in the world. So, yeah, it was my time and I left the club, you know, but I loved the club and I would have happily stayed there for the rest of my career, but that's just how football goes sometimes.
Yeah, well, it was sad from a fan's point of view, because you were, as I said, you were absolutely fantastic centre-half, and you ended up moving to Wolverhampton Wanderers for 1.75 million, and you ended up staying 10 years at Wolves, which is fantastic stint. Not many players do that now.
No, they don't. You know, really enjoyed my time at Wolves. Back in the Midlands, where I have some family in the Midlands, which is where I grew up. You know, it was a fresh start after I'd lost my son up in Sunderland. But yeah, it was good. You know, but it's, you know, Wolves didn't come without its ups and downs. We got promoted, we got relegated. Yes, it's the same story. But yeah, I had a great time at Wolves, and you know, I still live in the same house that I lived in when I first moved to Wolves. And a great bunch of fans like Sunderland were. So you know, fond memories. All the clubs I've been to, some fantastic fond memories.
Yeah, and you actually linked up with a few Sunderland players out of the time you spent with Sunderland. I think was Alex Ray there and Paul Butler?
There's a few, yeah, Butts, Alex Ray. Mickey Gray came down. I'm sure there'd have been more, but it was nice for them, you know, to play alongside those lads again. They came down, and I think Butts was already here, obviously, but Alex Ray, he came after, I can't remember, but like Mickey Gray came, and it's odd, it's strange how things work out, but it's good seeing them lads again, which you don't really expect to, and playing alongside them.
Yeah, well, obviously 10 years, and you were quite rightly rewarded with in 2014 with a testimonial, and the proceeds went to the Birmingham Children's Hospital, which is fantastic, but it was against a Sunderland 11, select 11, to get some of the old lads in there, but that must have been an unbelievable way to end a fantastic career.
It was brilliant, you know. Managed to get managed to get loads of the lads back playing, but we could, you know, physically run and kick and, you know, do anything on the pitch, you know, that weren't injured. So we pretty much got everyone back, and, you know, it was hard work, you know, ringing around and getting people blooming, getting injured the day before. But no, it was really nice just to have Quinn and Phillips back playing up front, and it was really good. It was really good. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, and it's, I really appreciate the effort of players coming back and playing, because, you know, I know how difficult it is to stop what they're doing and travel and come and play a game of football. But I'd like to think that they're happy coming and just, you know, getting back together with their teammates who they'd had such fond memories with, and come and spend that time together. For my special day.
Were the drinks flowing on the night, or was it not that kind of
thing? No, yeah, the drinks are flowing. Yes, there's a few of us. So we all had a drink together, obviously, and then a few of us kept it going, which was good. So, which is great. You know, it's nice to catch up, because you don't usually do it that, you know, you don't do it that often once you retire and you stepped away from the game. You cross paths. If you do a talk, you know, some players don't do, I don't really do talks or anything like that. Some players do more, so you don't really cross paths. So it's nice when you do, you know, bump into these players again. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I played a five-a-side tournament at St. George's Park last year, and Kev Phillips was there. So it was nice to, and I hadn't seen him for years. So it was nice to catch up and just, you know.
So, I mean, that was a fantastic end to your football career. But as we said at the beginning, kind of second career is, I suppose, is now well underway in the form of your artwork. So, I mean, just out of interest, were you doing this while you were playing, or was it just purely came about since you finished?
No, I was doing it when I was playing. I wasn't thinking, I was never at the standard I'm at now. I was just pencil sketch, you know, drawing at Cambridge. I'd done A-level at school, and so I enjoyed art, you know. It was kind of, you know, I enjoyed it. That's why I did A-level. So I did it as a hobby. So, you know, you do something that interests you, you continue to do it in your spare time. So that's what I did. I'd do drawings and that, and that's all I could afford at Cambridge. I could only afford pencil and paper, and that was it. I went to Sundland, I had a bit more money, so I could afford some more materials. So, yeah, I just taught myself oil painting. Yeah, and then I got, and because you do it every day, you know, have that spare time in the afternoon when I finished. So I just paint anything that I wanted to, or try and paint. And I just taught myself over years and, you know, over them years, to the point where they, you know, they got quite good, and players were saying, "Oh, you know, could you, you know, we've had a baby, can you paint them? Or I've got a dog, can you paint a dog?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, you know, I'll have a go." And they buy them off me. So kind of where it stemmed from. And, you know, I've always had that love of art. So the more I did, the better I got. And, you know, that's my job now. And, you know, it's great. You know, it's a great job. I paint all day, every day. And, you know, stuck in the house at the moment with the coronavirus, it's, you know, even goes in my favour that I do even more painting. So, you know, I love it. You know, it's a being a footballer was the best job ever. I tell my kids that, you know, there's no job better than being a footballer if you can do well in it. As far as, in terms of loving it, you know, I love art just like I love football. And it's great for me to be able to paint now, but I wouldn't have been able to do that if I wasn't a footballer for 20 years, because I, you know, financially wouldn't have been able to support my, you know, my art hobby, you know, hobby now job. So, because it's not like I'm selling them straight off the rack every single day. You know, it's hard work being an artist. I might be able to paint anything that I want, but selling's a different ball game, and, you know, it's not my strong point, you know, being a someone that, you know, sells things. But the painting, I'm good at the painting, so you know, that comes in time.
Well, like I say, I've followed you on Twitter for quite a while, just kind of looking at some of your artwork, and it's absolutely incredible. I mean, some of it's just amazing. And I'll say to anybody who hasn't seen it, I mean, I follow you on Twitter, but I mean, have you got a website or anything like that where you've got a collection of pieces? Or can,
well, I do. I use social media, so Twitter is, you have, yeah, you just type in Jody Craddock, you'll find it. I used Instagram with Jody_Craddock_, and I use Facebook, so Jody Craddock Art on Facebook, and that's where you'll see all my stuff. I'm not hard to find, and I'll, you know, social media is great, and I'll literally paint a picture or do the process. You know, I'm going through the process of this is it, you know, this step by step, and I'll put the pictures out. So that's kind of how people see it. And then, you know, I'll do art fairs and different stuff to sell it. And yeah, it's, yeah, social media is brilliant. You know, it's wasn't around back in the Sunderland days, but yeah,
probably a good thing.
It's great. It's a great tool for me to sell my work.
Absolutely fantastic. Anybody who hasn't seen it, get on there, have a look. It's absolutely mesmerizing, some of the stuff on there. Get on there and take a look. It's fantastic. And I hope on the other side of kind of current events, you get back out there and get back into the exhibitions. And
I will do. Yeah, thank you. I will do, definitely.
I can't tell you how much of a privilege it's been to speak to you, Jordy. I mean, like I said, I saw you play, unbelievable player, and a cracking person to boot. So thank you so much for your time. I'm hoping we're going to put some smiles on people's faces with that. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, no, it was a privilege to remember, you know, to go back over some of these memories and, you know, and talk about them as a player. You just kind of, you forget a lot of things, and so it's nice to go over them. And it's a way for me to also say thank you to the Sunderland fans for all their amazing support over the years. You know, you really brought me through some difficult times, and I was there. My wife, I will hold Sunderland people in my heart for the rest of my life. And you know, I love you all, and thank you. You're amazing. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.